back to the podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. And got a nice show planned for you today to bookend College Basketball Geek Week. I'll get to that in just a second. If you aren't already subscribed to the podcast, please be sure to do that on iTunes. Just go to the iTunes store, search CBSSports.com, College Hoops Podcast, CBSSports.com, College, whatever you want to do, it'll pop up. You'll see the orange icon, basketball, and be sure to subscribe and very much appreciate that. Also, I want to encourage more and more on this podcast. I'm going to reference a few emails, some tweets and stuff. Feel free to tweet any sort of thoughts, questions for upcoming podcasts, whether, you know, guest dependent or not. If you just have a general thing you'd like addressed, would love to get the listeners a little more integrated into this. So please feel free to tweet at me, at Matt Norlander, or you can email me, mattnorlander@cbsinteractive.com. And would love to get you guys and girls more into this podcast and make it more indulgent. So please be sure to do that. And then I want to send out a thanks to everyone that's listening whenever they can that might have been affected by Hurricane Sandy. I hope everyone is doing as well as they possibly can, all things considered. The damage obviously is tremendous, and we're really seeing more and more in the aftermath just how bad it is. Like, I knew we thought it would be pretty bad, but it almost reminds me of Katrina in that it's really in day 2, 3, 4, and then going forward after, where we're seeing the price that we'll have to pay in terms of just damage costs, which it seems it's going to be in 100 billion at least. And then you see stuff like Staten Island, people saying they haven't received any federal help yet. And so anyway, I hope everyone's doing well that's able to listen to this. I had a buddy who couldn't fly to a wedding in Chicago. He drove 14 hours there because he couldn't fly out of LaGuardia. And it's pretty nuts. And John Gassaway, who's joining me on today's podcast along with Ken Pomeroy, wanted to be on this so bad because he was going to be on the Monday one with Dan Hanner, but we had some technical difficulties, and he lives in Jersey, and so he drove all the way up to Albany just to be on this podcast. So one, Ken and John, thanks for joining me, but John specifically, thanks for doing that, but are you okay? How is your house doing? I know you don't have power. Is that the only problem at this point for you?
I'm okay. Thanks. Thanks for asking. Thanks for having me. Good to be here with you and Ken. But we were incredibly fortunate. The house is fine, and all its occupants are fine, but we got hit hard. And in keeping with what you said, Matt, it was a situation where on the first day, everybody came out and said, wow, we're alive. It's great. And then on day 2, 3, and 4, things actually start to break down a little bit. And to my fellow residents of northern New Jersey, if you're hearing this, please stop waiting 2 hours in line for gas. Get in your car, drive a half hour north. Things are completely normal. You can just get gas and then turn around and come back. That's 1 hour instead of 2 hours. But things were getting crazy, and the power was off, and there was no food, and the restaurants were insane. And my wife said, we can go to Philly or Albany, and Albany's half the price. So here's the rest of the story. Here I am.
Wow. Okay. Well, glad to hear, relatively speaking, you know, you're doing okay. And
doing great. Doing great. No complaints at all. Doing fine. Yeah.
You can follow John on Twitter at John Gassaway. He is the editor of the forthcoming release of Basketball Prospectus, the best stat-based, I think it's a zine, because it's not a magazine. And, you know, I think a zine is actually technically what we should refer to it, right, John?
You know, the best use of this product is on your iPad as you watch these early season games. With a flick of your finger, you can be reading good reality-based stuff on any Division I team, including, you know, if you're a fan of a major conference team and you think, oh, this opponent here is just a cupcake, well, you can find out all about them. And it's right there just by the PDF, which will be coming out just a matter of days, and you get that instant gratification. But if you're old school, it'll also be available as a paperback at Amazon.
Is there a definitive release date, or is that still, you know, kind of hiding behind the curtain with the wizard there?
You know, no, it's not hiding behind the curtain. It got the definitive date got smashed to smithereens by Sandy. So,
okay, yeah, I figured.
I'll know more tomorrow. Matt and Ken, you have the honor of, this is my first internet contact with the outside outside world in some days. So I expect you guys to be suitably brilliant. I've just imagined all the great things I've been missing. So this is a glimpse of the outside world for me.
Yeah, well, you know, the internet always a party. And Ken, you've been so patient here. I don't know the last time you went this long without talking, but I appreciate that. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Matt. I feel kind of guilty in the western part of the country here, where you know, the weather couldn't be nicer. So
you can really twist that knife, can't you, man?
Ironically, Ken was here 2 weeks ago. I saw him, and it was beautiful. And he probably thought, "Wow, this is some kind of utopian world." And now he hears the tales I tell, and he knows the real truth. So,
well, it wasn't all utopian. I mean, I was able to meet Mr. Pomeroy. We went out to lunch in my quaint little city of Stamford, Connecticut. And what happens? But we finish eating, and there's a foot chase happening about us. And it's not just like, at first we see one guy just running in this kind of, I don't know, average-sized cop, like out of breath, going like, "You're only gonna make it worse, man." And he's like, he can't catch the perp. And then we're like, okay, so we pay our bill, we walk, you know, we were within walking distance of my apartment, and we turn a corner, and all of a sudden there's like three cop cars and like six cops talking by radio trying to track this guy down. It made the trip worth it. Forget just the trip to Stanford, your whole East Coast trip beyond that, Ken. I mean, that was
absolutely
the highlight, right? Okay.
I was not expecting an episode of Stanford 911 to break out in front of us, but that was easily worth the price of admission.
It was quite insane. You can subscribe to Ken's site, kenpom.com. It's the best. I've got the two best deals in college basketball. Oh, I'm such a good pitch man on this podcast. Basketball Perspectives, the zine itself, is just ridiculously low price for the amount of information you're getting there. And then Ken's is only, you know, twice that at $20, basically. And you can have access to any sort of data you want for the entire season and the past 10 years now of tempo-free goodness. So be sure to do that. You can follow, again, both these guys on Twitter, at Ken Pomeroy, at John Gassaway. That is John with an H. And and yeah, so there's that. So the Wednesday podcast had Parrish and Goodman on, and we're going to go to that first. I know Ken listened to it, John. I know you didn't. Don't worry. We're going to – you're on the training wheels here. No worries.
Rub it in.
No. It's not that. Just but anyway, so we got into this like 20-minute debate. I intentionally spurred it because we, you know, I was just trying to pump Hanner's rankings that came out earlier in the week and Ken's, and kind of just get the discussion with those two guys about, because they don't hate numbers as much as they want to put on, and they accuse me of loving numbers more than I actually do when I actually just sort of use them. So that podcast was a lot of fun, and then basically interrogating me and then accusing me of referencing things that most college basketball fans don't really use, and that's not true. And I'll get to some tweets and some emails in a sec here. But I want to give Ken the first chance to kind of respond to that podcast. And if you want to veer off into a different avenue altogether from that, you can. But your impressions of my formidable colleagues, Jeff Goodman and Gary Parrish, and their current stances on not just, you know, your site and Tempo Free numbers, but the greater public's, you know, college basketball fans, you know, how it's embracing these things in 2012 as opposed to maybe 2, 4, 6, 8 years ago.
Okay. Well, yeah, I got all sorts of material. But
okay. Whip out the knife, man.
Yeah, just to, I guess, keep it simple to start out with. I mean, so I think Gary's points were less objectionable. I mean, he admitted he uses this stuff all the time personally. So, I mean, he sees the value in it. And he made a good point. You know, I think if you go to a random basketball game and you, you know, poll the audience on how much they know about advanced stats, you'd find a very low percentage of them do. The casual fan doesn't get into this very much. So, you know, he made a point there that I think is valid. I think, you know, it's kind of a fine line you walk down when you say, "Hey, I use this information. It's really good, but I'm not going to share it with my audience." Like, I don't exactly know how you walk that tightrope. I mean, I realize some people in his audience wouldn't understand it, but, you know, the thing is, all these stats we use, or at least the vast majority of them, are either, you know, a percentage, or they're like one number divided by another. Mm-hmm. And people have kind of accepted field goal percentage, I think. I mean, that's just, you know, you're trying to do something, and what percentage of the time do you succeed? You know, that's all a rebounding percentage is. You know, you're trying to do something, how often do you get a rebound? Mm-hmm. turnover percentage. You know, how often do you have the ball? How often do you commit a turnover? So, you know, to say that, like, these stats wouldn't translate to a general audience, I think – I understand why Gary does it that way. He has a huge audience already, and there's nothing to be gained by him to, you know, introduce new concepts. But I don't think people are quite as dumb or ignorant as he was indicating.
Yeah, I agree. Well, now, what about the other one?
The other one. You know, so here's the thing. Like, I don't know how to gauge the other one. He's first of all, I've said this privately and I'll say it publicly. Like, I think the world needs Jeff Goodmans. I need Jeff Goodmans. I need people that don't use stats and just use their eyes, just as kind of like a control sample to see how they do. And I think Jeff's actually really good at what he does without using stats.
Yes, however, he is very, very, very good. Absolutely. Yeah.
I just want to state that up front before I
bring out the sledgehammer. Okay.
Yeah. The thing is, so I'll give you an example here of where stats might help him do his job better. And it actually does help him do his job better. You know, he puts out this list of top 50 shooters, right? He's done it 4 years in a row, and it's a great list. I was just kind of going back through last year's list, and, you know, it worked out pretty well, actually. Most of the guys on his list ended up being great shooters last year. The three freshmen he put on his list were actually all below average shooters. Like, not, you know, below average on his list, but below average nationally. He had Brad Beal, PJ Harrison, and he had this other guy, Damian Leonard from South Carolina, who ended up shooting about 32% last year. If I can read aloud here, Matt, if you'll allow.
Oh, my.
These were the comments he made on Damian Leonard 2 years ago. Quoting Jeff Goodman here, normally I try and stay away from putting freshmen on the list. However, I've seen Leonard numerous times, and he has a picture-perfect stroke. He reminds me of a poor man's Ray Allen.
Okay.
And he shot 32%, and it's not, you know, not to throw Goodman under the bus, but there's a clear case where
yeah, I get you.
Using his eyes to make a judgment. He has no stats on these freshmen. You know, he has stats on all the other guys on the list. So that's, I think that's informing his judgment. He wasn't able to have stats for these three guys, and they all ended up being, you know, either slightly below average, or in the case of PJ Harrison, way below average shooters last year. And so just an example where the eyes can mislead even Jeff Goodman. And as I said, I think for the most part, for a guy who just uses his eyes or just talks to coaches, he does a great job. But there's a case, clearly his top 50 shooters list, he's using stats to make that list. And for guys where he doesn't have stats, he's not doing that great of a job of identifying great shooters.
Okay, fair case. And I do want to I mentioned this on the Hanner podcast, and I want to reiterate it right here now before I have John kind of, spring off from Ken's point. And that's specifically with me, because I'll speak for myself more than you two gentlemen. But I try and do my damnedest to merge both worlds, because – and I thought we had actually moved beyond this through last season. I think in some cases we have, but in other cases we don't. And I'm shaded or leaning toward one way or another, because I deal with Parrish and Goodman on a daily basis, and I'll say I want to write something, like, don't write about stats, you nerd. But I want to have people watching games and people then, you know, letting the meal cool down and then going back to it and seeing, okay, what happened in that, or what's happened in the past 10 games with a team or a player, and let's merge both of them together. And that's what we're doing. It's not one side or the other. One of my colleagues, Jerry Hinnan, you know, tweeted at me in the aftermath of this podcast. He's like, are people really accusing anyone of only using numbers to base judgment off of games? He said, are people actually doing that? I said, no, but people are, you know, they accuse us, you know, some people, like, you know, any of us three or Luke Wynn or whoever you want to point out. And that's simply not the case. But there's just this natural instinct to kind of, you know, yell it louder, because without that, you know, there's just the rest of the public that wants to know this kind of stuff isn't going to embrace it unless you have people pushing it forward, I guess. John, if you want to expand on that point or take it somewhere else, feel free.
2 points, even though I didn't hear the podcast, I feel like I did. You guys did a great job, so I'm going to spring into action based on my understanding. Ken's point about people are already using percentages, and percentages can be come up with by people and understood by people is exactly right. And what we're lacking is not simplicity, but what we're lacking is just the habit of doing that. Last year, Mike DeCourcy, God help him, used rebound margin on Twitter, I think, and he was just mauled left and right by eager young.
Oh, but he'll
stay with me. Okay. He was mauled left and right by eager young prospectus and KenPom readers saying, no, you should use rebound percentage. And you know, I give him credit. Of course, he stuck to his guns. He's like, well, if rebound percentage is so damn useful, how come I've never seen one of these things in a box score? And he's exactly right. It's just a matter of habit. And I know that Ken's voluminous website, or our zine, as you call it, that comprises a 300-some page attempt to nudge habits along a little bit every year. And then your colleague who tweeted at you, Matt, saying, I don't understand this person that just bases their judgments off of only numbers. I'm right there with that colleague. I've never understood. I mean, I completely understand the person who says, I just use my eyes, and that's fine. If they want to do that, that's fine. And those people exist. I have literally never met the person who just uses numbers,
right?
Who sits in a room and pores over box scores and says, no, I don't want to see this fantastic game that's going on in front of me. Two quick examples just to broaden this from the people on this podcast, but characters like Kevin Pelton, who embraces both the NBA and the college game, or Drew Cannon, I defy anyone to beat either of those guys on either numbers or eyes. If you think you can out-scout either of those guys, be my guest. Let's see what you got, and good luck to you. This is not an either-or thing, and when it's represented as such, it's a false dichotomy.
And both those guys have been contributors to Basketball Prospectus in the past, and I guess still are, right? I mean, I know that Drew is actually working with Butler now, but did he do anything for BP?
Yeah, he wrote this Butler preview where he talked about how there's statistical analysis is the best in the world and yada yada, but I don't see any conflict of interest there.
Oh yeah, totally. No.
He wrote a smashing good ACC preview, so he's very much in the kit. You bet.
A couple quick tweets. You know, after this podcast, I had gone on Twitter and asked for some feedback there, and DeCourcy, you had mentioned, was funny. He tweeted at me, you know, so wish Norlander had me on the podcast over Goodman and Parrish about advanced stats because those guys were way too soft. But DeCourcy's already been on for the preseason, so I'm going to have to pass on that. But I did get, I mean, you know, one, I love this one from a guy whose handle is Numbers Don't Lie. He goes, feedback, don't do podcasts with those flat earthers. I thought that cracked me up. Goodman and Parrish make this podcast what it is, and they're awesome. I would hate to do it without them, and our arguments make it all the better. And for the record, like, both those dudes know more about hoops than I do, period. I mean, they've been around the game longer than I have, and we have bashed Goodman plenty, but straight up, like, Goodman is the smartest, I don't know if I want to use the term eye-based, but it, like, there's just no other writer in the sport, and I said this before, you know, he was my colleague or anything, that just knows more players and what they do and their habits. I mean, his amount of knowledge is just ridiculous. And so he has a point when he comes at me with some of the stuff that he says, but I'm just trying to be like, dude, you're so awesome now. Think about, like, how much better. It's like Superman with everything except the power to fly, basically. Like, with the way that he evaluates and how many contacts he has, I just try and nudge him toward that. But the point I'm making with all these feedback is I got about 10 or 12 responses from people that were like, listen, I agree. And I don't know, they could have had guys say, no, listen, that's not the way we should do it. But the point is, and we're going to get to Ken's rankings in the book here in like 2 seconds, but the point is, I feel like the average basketball fan, forget college or NBA, like, just combined, like, whether you like either or, is just more informed, wants to be more informed than they were 5-10 years ago, and that's a really good thing, and we should be encouraging that. And so when DeCourcy might kind of decry that tempo free stats mean anything, like, it's good that he gets pummeled down. If he wants to stand behind his statements, that's fine, but I feel like we've crossed a Rubicon and we're permanently in a new era.
Agree.
Okay, good deal.
I didn't I didn't sign up for a Jeff Goodman love fest. So.
I know, but he deserves to be defended when he's not here to defend himself, and I by all
means. Ken, I've got Matt on video here, and he was making the "I'm going to edit this out" signal. So
okay. All right. So let's go. We'll do Ken's rankings first, and then BP the preseason scene. So Ken's ratings came out this week. They were the last kind of preseason ones to be released because the man arrogantly wants to put his last, and he doesn't influence anyone else. And I'm going to run down the top 15 real quick, starting at 15. So he has 15 UNC, Gonzaga 14, Texas 13, Michigan 12, Florida 11, Kansas 10, Duke 9, Louisville 8, Syracuse 7, UCLA 6, Wisconsin 5, Michigan State 4, Tom Crean in Indiana at 3, Ohio State 2, and that Kentucky team number 1. So I'm going to ask you the same thing I asked Hanner on the Monday pod, and you can go well beyond the 15 if you want. And I want you to kind of spring off what you blogged about when the rankings went live. What were the surprises when you were doing this with the teams, and which teams do you feel the innate need to defend or explain within your rankings?
Well, as usual, Wisconsin's a little out of place.
That accounts for Gasser's injury, number 5, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, they dropped from 5th to 5th on his
okay.
And, you know, they weren't really a surprise. I knew they'd be ranked high, and I don't feel the need to defend them because it's difficult to defend where they're at. I do think, I wrote in the blog that, you know, last year they were, you know, a pretty good team. I mean, they were somewhere in the 10 to 15 range, and they lose Jordan Taylor. They lose Gosser, but after that, you know, they pretty much got everybody back, and they got, potentially an impact freshman. It's just kind of weird to me that people struggle to rank them anywhere in the top 25. And when they do, it's almost like kind of they do it apologetically. Like, well, I don't know how they're going to be this good, but they got Bo Ryan, so, you know, I'm putting them here.
All right, so I'm going to pause you right there because you're Wisconsin first. I got a nice email from a listener, Brian Pitts. I told him I'd read it on the podcast, and it's about Wisconsin. So he goes, I have a question specifically for Ken. As it's pointed out, they're ranked high, and he wants to know if the efficiency ratings for basketball are biased towards slow, deliberate teams. And he goes, my understanding of the philosophy of an up-tempo team like UNC is this. If you have more talent and or more athleticism, you want more possessions to increase the chances of exploiting the variance of your team's skill level. But if you play faster, you obviously won't be as efficient because you're making quicker decisions, which leads to poor shot selection and more turnovers. But you accept these shortcomings to lengthen the game. The inverse is that if you play slow and don't turn the ball over and take better shots, your efficiency will be higher than the average. Doesn't this show bias towards slow tempo teams to be ranked higher, specifically because they have the tendency to be more efficient? Of course, not everyone has a coach as skilled as Bo Ryan, who recruits players to fit his system. Perhaps I have a fundamental misunderstanding of the rankings, but playing up tempo seems to be correlating to playing less efficiently and vice versa. Is this an inherent bias in the system?
Wow, that's an amazing question.
Okay. Ryan Pitts, everyone. Thank you for the email. Very much appreciated.
Yeah. That's a good question. Actually, when I started doing these ratings, I kind of wondered that myself, because, you read Dean Oliver's work and, you have low possession games. There should be more variance, yada, yada, yada. But in reality, you don't see that, rating correlates to pace in any way. And furthermore, that strategy sounds good in theory, and it works obviously for North Carolina, and that's part of the reason they do it. But, Wisconsin wouldn't be successful if they tried to do that. Even if they tried to recruit to that kind of system, they wouldn't be able to get those recruits. So they sort of out of necessity, I think out of pure genius, came up with this system that's very unique that they can recruit to. And it does, create, I guess, higher variance, but I've never really seen how it inflates their rating at all. They could just as easily, the thing that inflates a rating is that they just, beat the holy crap out of, kind of weaker opponents, during non-conference games. At least that was the case last year. That's kind of part of the reason. In previous seasons, I guess people say they're inflated because they haven't, come through in the tournament. But, the other thing about last year that I want to throw on the table about Wisconsin, I mean, they had 10 losses, so people look at that and they're like, yeah, they can't be ranked that high. They had 5 losses to eventual one seeds, and they had three losses to a 2-3-4. They had two losses to Iowa. Okay, those are bad games. But, you know, you look at – and they swept Indiana, who everybody thinks is number one this year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, their season last year was pretty good. They had an extremely tough schedule. And you look at any team that's ranked 10 to 15, they have, you know, two or three bad losses on there. So I definitely had Wisconsin overrated, but it's not like they weren't a top 15 team.
All right, cool. Any other teams that you want to kind of extrapolate on here in your initial rankings?
I guess Louisville was kind of a surprise. I think you and Hannah kind of talked about that, so I don't know that we need to get too deep into that. You know, I talked about Kansas State on the blog. Don't really understand why they're unranked. I mean, I do understand people don't like Bruce Weber, apparently, but in previews that I've seen of Kansas State, few people say they don't like Bruce Weber, even though that seems to be like the only reason not to rank them. So Kansas State's kind of like the Missouri of last season, where you know people are down on the coach. There's a lot of returning talent, and you know, I don't know how it's going to turn out, but I as I said in the blog, I'm pegging Bruce Weber for the early candidate for coach of the year, because expectations there seem to be super unrealistically low.
Okay, and the differences in your system and Hanner's, for those that are just like, KenPom is a name that's been around for a long time now, man. And Dan Hanner is kind of still like super niche, like it is, but he knows what he's doing, and he has a very thorough ranking system. And he went into the differences in the rankings of what the kind of the guts of the system. But there are some discrepancies between some teams, so I'm just going to ask you why you think that might be. The guys that run the floor, who do a good job, did the heavy lifting here, and they showed that Utah is the biggest discrepancy. You are way down on Utah, while Hanner's got a middle of the pack. Meanwhile, Hanner's got USC at 45, and you've got him at 188. That's the second big. I really like USC this year, by the way. You're higher on Vanderbilt than Hanner is. There's a 113 ranking difference in there. I guess with those three specifically, reasons why you think there might be such a huge gap between what your system is doing and what his is doing, when the fundamentals of both systems are still relatively similar.
Yeah, I mean, they're mostly similar, but so his, you know, he constructs lineups and he knows like every player on the roster pretty much, whereas my system just kind of assumes, you know, you are who you were last year, and if players are coming back, you're going to be a lot better. If nobody's coming back, you're going to be significantly worse. And if you add, you know, a highly ranked freshman, that'll help you. And that's essentially everything that goes into the system. So not as much information goes into this. It goes into mine. It goes as goes into his. The other issue is, like on a team like Utah, you know, as I said, if you don't return players, you don't, you get penalized regardless of who you were.
But at the same time, Kentucky is your number one team.
Right. So Kentucky is, we're jumping around here, but Kentucky is.
Hey, listen, you're on the stand here. I'm cross-examining.
Yeah. Right. So the difference between Utah and Kentucky is that Kentucky has the best recruiting class in the nation coming in.
Naturally, right.
Utah doesn't. And Kentucky's last two seasons were very, very good. So even if they had, they had no highly rated freshmen coming in, I'd still probably have them rated like 25th or something, you know, because it just, the system just assumes you're going to bring in some certain level of talent that was, you know, somewhat lower than the way you played the last two seasons, but not, you know, like me and you joining the team. Mm-hmm. So that's why Kentucky gets ranked high, and that's why Utah gets ranked low. They were not very good last season. People don't return, so they get rated worse. They won't be that bad. I mean, the system doesn't see that they have, you know, the Big Sky freshman of the year transferred over. They got Aaron Dotson from LSU. You know, other guys came in, and the players last year were, you know, kind of suggested to find more competitive outfits to play for. So that's the difference in those two teams.
All right, one more thing, then we're going to get to John and BP. You mentioned in your blog post that kind of did the unveiling for the rankings, that you've got Maryland 153. That is certainly one of the ones that stands out to me, because I think Maryland is going to be a team that gets into the NCAA tournament with relative ease this year. So when you do these kind of things and you see what your rankings turn out, I mean, there's obviously a natural reaction that you have with some sort of team. So when you see Maryland at 153, one, do you agree with it? And two, if you don't, let's say you don't, okay, and you think Maryland in your gut or so, however you want to quantify it, is a top 50 team, how long will that kind of turnaround take for any Terrapin fans that have found you on Twitter, just read the site and have stewed silently or gone to their message boards? What would it take for Maryland to kind of climb up and be one of those top 50 teams when they start out at 153?
Right. Well, first of all, if there are any Maryland fans listening, you're not starting at 153. You're actually starting at 135. So let's get that straight.
Oh, okay. So yeah. The post says 153.
Oh really? Oh well. I'll
yes. Oh, track. It is one seat. No, I got the ranking up here, and you are right. So typo on you, but still 135 is way too low.
Yeah, turtle, obviously. Ken. Well, so it's I don't know about way too low, but it's too low.
Okay.
And I mean, I guess the reason I'm a little hesitant to like jump on the Maryland bandwagon is I heard all this stuff last year. Multiple famous people were saying, oh, watch Maryland,
I think out. That's an indirect shot at Scott Van Pelt. I'll be sure to let him know.
It was more than just him. I mean, there were multiple people who, and it's like, oh, when they get Alex Len, watch out. And I mean, you can look at the results. They weren't really that good with Alex Len. I'm sure he'll be better this year. And I know, they got rid of Stoglin. So that is perhaps addition by subtraction. But, my system sees that as subtraction by subtraction. He took a lot of shots and he made a fair amount of them. And, that's what it sees. He's gone and those possessions are going to be difficult to replace. So I guess the second part of your question is what's my reaction when I see that? I mean,
no.
I guess, look, I think more general question is like what happens when the ratings come out and you see like teams that are mismatched, they're way off from where the general public thinks they should be. And that is a concern to me. Like I can totally, even though I bashed voters in the AP poll who like came to this magical agreement that Indiana was number one, and I think that's kind of weird. I can totally relate the idea that, if you come up with a poll and you had Indiana 12 and then you look at Andy Katz and he has them one, like you would question yourself, and I do the same thing. I contemplate doing my own system and moving teams around, but that doesn't really add anything to the discussion. So that's
right.
That's
but okay. So Maryland fan sees their team at 135 and they're like, no, we should be better. Like what, what should they expect? What should they aim for? If they're going to be a KenPom top 40, top 45 team, do they need something like a 10-1, 11-1 start, not knowing how the whole damn college basketball field is going to play out, but is it going to take a super hot start in the first 12 or 13 games, or is it something even beyond that where they've got to actually kind of prove it all the way into conference season?
Well, I mean, look, they're going to have to prove they're a top 50 team, yeah, for the whole season if that's what they want to be. But the rankings will adjust fairly quickly. I mean, first of all, they open with Kentucky, and I have them as a 16-point underdog, and they're probably realistically like 8 or 9 points.
Okay.
I don't know what the line will be, but it'll be something like that. So they should outperform their expectation right off the bat. And, if they play like a top 40 team in the first 3 or 4 games, I imagine they'll move up into the top 70 or 80 at that point. I mean, the system's pretty flexible. It doesn't, even though I keep the initial ratings in to some extent through, late January, the effect is decreasing every day and it all works itself out.
All right, good deal. You mentioned, they'd be a 16-point underdog and they might be 8 or 9. When I put this out on Twitter earlier in the week, I had about 5 people respond to me about how they used to love your site 5 years ago because they could gamble on games and be ahead of the thing. But that's another podcast altogether. Maybe we'll save that for like January. But there are people that are like genuinely angry that you become like big now because they can't like beat Vegas on these lines anymore or whatever. All right, let's go to John here, who's been way too patient, and I appreciate that, dude. So let's talk about basketball prospectus. Is this the 5th? Edition? Is this puppy 5 years old now?
This puppy is 4 years old, but it's the 5th edition, if you can grasp that paradox. Yes. Ken and I, the last time we had a presidential election, Ken and I were crisscrossing the country to mobs of adoring fans, and we were touting our work, and it's been smooth sailing ever since. So, yeah, this is the 5th book, and it's got a lot of familiar names and a lot of new names, and really excited for people to get their hands on it. I think they'll like it. It's got Dan Hanner's rankings that we unveiled at the site on Monday. That kicks things off. And as a special added feature, Ken mentioned that Dan bases those on, I think Matt's term was sociopathically thorough.
Yes.
player rankings. What Dan has done is he said, well, Cody Zeller will use, you know, whatever. I'm not reading this, but for instance, 28% of possessions and his offensive rating will be X, you know, and we toss those individual player ratings in Dan's top 30 teams. So that's one value add for getting the book. And then, the preview of every Division I team, which we've had now for the last three books, I think. So it's a good read.
It's yes, it is equally sociopathically thorough. You've assembled an army basically of these bright young minds that want to get into writing, that love college hoops, that understand how per possession statistics work. And so you find them, you recruit them, you're the snake charmer, and you've done an awesome job at it. If you want to order this, by the way, basketballperspectus.com will have the link readily available here in the coming days. This is a Friday podcast, so if you're listening to this by Monday, is there a decent chance it's going to be available, John?
It'll be out next week, yes.
Okay, there we go. So a few quick questions about it. One, I want to know if you're willing to unveil what you go all in on an essay every year. I'd love to know if you're willing to share what that is, or at least, you know, the movie trailer version. And then two, you've had some big names write the forewords for this in the past years. Are you able to tell us also who you recruited to do that?
Yeah, last year on this podcast at this time, you had your advanced copy and you yelled at me because I didn't do any of the writing in it. So,
yeah.
I think your exact words were, "Dude, you're not in this." So I was so hurt and I ran away and said, "That's not going to happen again." So here's your 20,000 word Big East preview, Matt Norlander,
okay.
by John Gassaway. Hope you like it.
Awesome! I am so pumped about that. I swear.
And make an appearance at the front of the book this year, which I didn't do last year. And I last February, I got to go through the NCAA mock selection exercise with Matt and a bunch of other good people. And I used that occasion to write about the creation of the RPI. And now in this fall's book, I go into part two and talk a little bit more in depth about the RPI's current use and why that use is leading us in some directions we don't want to go in. So that's what John Gassaway is up to. And the foreword this year comes from John Calipari.
That is awesome. Okay, so first of all, I think it's great that Cal does this because it's no longer a lame criticism. I think everyone's kind of flipped or just accepted it. But there used to be this thing where Cal couldn't really coach that well. He could only recruit, which is stupid because people in the game have realized for long, years and years and years, that Cal's actually a pretty damn good X and O's coach. But the fact that he does this just kind of adds to that. How did you get him? Can you give us a little detail of, you know, was this your idea? Did you have to contact the SID at Kentucky? Or was he just such a fanatical BP guy that actually he at messaged you on Twitter and was
That's
like,
right.
I got to write this thing, John. And you're like, listen, Mr. Calipari, it's April. Get back to me, you know, closer to September. We'll see what we can do. I'm sure that's how it went down, right?
You know, Matt, the guy was always pestering me, you know, tugging at my sleeve. And finally, I had to be like, all right, you know, just to get him off my back. It was really,
hear that,
really no, I mean, I think the Lloyd Dobler line is I asked or I called him up. And much to my delight, he said yes. We've been fortunate. We had Brad Stevens a couple of years ago and Arizona coach Sean Miller last year. The informal working rule, half joking, half serious, is you have to at least make it to the Elite Eight the year before. And we're 3 for 3 so far, and we've even had a couple of national championship game participants. So coaches, if you're listening, get to that final game, and the most important perk of all is that you might get a phone call from John Gassaway.
Forget the contract extensions, the possible endorsements, the legacy established
thrill,
thing.
The
reason
about,
why you want to make the Elite Eight is you got to write the forward for BP.
That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, it'll be available next week, and everybody rush out and buy a copy.
I want to wrap up with this. I'm going to cross some worlds here. You mentioned how you were at the mock selection in Indianapolis in February with me. And, yeah, and you've got your part two, This Time It's Murder, in the book. And at least that's what I hope it is. I'm picturing that in my mind. That's the theme of your essay. But another person that was there, and I'm going to bring Ken in for this as well, was Nate Silver, who we got to meet. And actually, Nate, John, and I did a podcast shortly thereafter. If you're interested and you've heard Nate Silver's name dragged through the mud and slung at the stars in the past 2 weeks with the election, go listen to what he was like back in February before he became this rock star of the political world. He does some prognostication for the New York Times and nailed it basically in 08 and is predicting an Obama win this year. But what's been interesting, guys, to me is that Silver's – he's just become the target here for good and for bad. I mean, conservatives hate the guy because he's predicting Obama to win, while other guys are like, he's dealing in facts. And, you know, I've made the correlation, Ken. I don't know if that's made you uncomfortable, but, you know, I remember – 3, 4, even 2 years ago, when Ken and guys like John were getting this on a similar yet different realm in the sports world, I think the difference here is that you've got a lot of people willing to evolve in the sports world, and you've actually seen a couple of pieces now go up that are comparing what Nate does to what sports guys have done. And John Hollinger sent out a tweet that was like, you know, all these political people killing Nate Silver make sports fans look like they've got, you know, PhDs in mathematics or whatever. But you know, Ken, I want to know if you'd picked up on that and what Nate had seen, and any just impressions on you know, the willingness for some sports fans to embrace statistics, while what Nate does in the political world is also based a lot in polling and data. And yet I wonder if that's just permanently, if you know, because people get so staked in their sides, you know, Republicans and Democrats and conservative and liberals and all that, that they'll just never even totally embrace it.
Yeah. I love Nate's work, obviously. And I'll defend him at every turn. I think the difference between what he does and what we do is that in his world, there are people who have a stake in the outcome, have a very heavy stake in the outcome. And it's not – for a lot of people on TV that are talking about politics, it's really not important to be right. It's important to be entertaining and give a message to a very specific set of viewers that are, you know, that want to hear that message. And that's – significantly different from sports. I mean, there's definitely an aspect of that, I guess, when you talk about fan sites and things like that. But even on fan sites, you know, where, I mean, you know, I releasing these ratings, I get trashed by people who think that their team is underrated. But, you know, you go to those forums and you see what people are talking about. And there's usually like two or three people that chime in and say, hey, you know, wait a second. Like, I don't think Ken actually hates our team. It's just his stupid algorithm and, you know, we can still be good or whatever. And So I think, I guess to sum it up, I feel like infinitely more sympathy for what Nate's going through than what John or I ever had to go through.
And he and John, I mean, Nate's actually in the Prospectus family because he started, I don't know if he started, but at one time he actually wrote for Baseball Prospectus.
Well, Ken and I are hardly impartial on the subject of Nate Silver because basketballprospectus.com started in the fall of 2007 with contributions from Ken Pomeroy, John Gassaway, and Kevin Pelton. And the guy who brought us into the Prospectus family was Nate Silver. I remember conference calls in the summer of 07 where Ken was like, yeah, this Prospectus guy wants to talk to us. His name is Nate Silver. And not being a current baseball fan at that time, I was like, well, who the heck's Nate Silver? And I was impressed.
That's what people are asking to this very day now. And
is this Nate Silver guy, and why has he got Obama winning?
So, you know, we're hardly impartial, but he shows how he arrives at the conclusions that he draws. And I think that's what we all try to do. And anytime an NC State fan is yelling at me and saying, you know, you're an idiot because you called my team overrated. All I have to do is just read a little of what Nate catches in late October of an election year, and I feel so much better. So yeah, totally. my hat is off to the guy. He's smart, which we already knew, but he's something more important than smart. He's courageous, and he takes it on. So hats off, Nate.
And he looks like Ruxin from The League, which I don't know if you guys have seen that show. But, and I haven't told him that yet, but I'm sure he's heard it. But it kind of hit me like a week ago. Whenever he was on The Daily Show, I was watching. I was like, that's Ruxin. But anyway, not to get political with the listeners. I just wanted to compare one to another, and he had a prospectus tie-in. But listen, fellas, this was good. Nice little 45-minute podcast. I think we touched on a lot of good stuff. Again, at John Gassaway, at Ken Pomeroy on Twitter. If you're not already, then get with the game and be sure to subscribe. Help Ken eat food and pay his rent. So subscribe to that, and please help John get power back on in his house so he can have nice things and buy.
So I can listen to this podcast. It'll be the first one I've heard.
Exactly. There you go. Guys, again, thank you so much. We'll get both of you back on later in the year, although I think we might have to split it up because I think I can hear Ken fuming over there that John took up so much of his time on this one.
So. Yeah, I'm a little upset about that.
Gotcha. All right, fellas. Hey, listen, have a safe weekend. Appreciate it so much. And for everyone listening, thank you again. If you've been affected by the storm, stay dry, stay safe. Hopefully you get power soon. And just my appreciation for you listening. We'll be back on Monday with a completely different kind of podcast. Jeff Borzello, who fortunately did not lose anything too big in the storm. He's right there on Long Beach. He will be joining me on Monday. Don't know when that's going to be up because I fly to Florida for a wedding. So I don't know if I'm going to record that late Monday night back in Connecticut or sometime Sunday somewhere in Disney World because that's where the wedding is. Yeah, that's going to be something to look forward to there. So thank you again, gentlemen. Thank you, listeners. We'll talk to you in a couple days.